I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer health topics in a smart and sometimes counterintuitive way you won't hear anywhere else. Like, what's the least amount of exercise I can do to get the benefits? Which psychedelics can improve my mental health? And how can I check for cancer if I don't have a family doctor? Top experts help me bring you what you need to know in plain language in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
I think it was quite scary when in the middle of the night we started hearing booming, and we didn't know what it was. I mean, we knew what it was. We don't know what extent it would be. But thank God the Israeli army came through.
I hope that's it, and I hope Iran will stop now. I imagine that Israel will respond because, I mean, our whole country was covered in missiles and drones. So what can you do? But we have to stop it somehow.
Those are people in Jerusalem expressing a sense of relief after an unprecedented attack. On Saturday, Iran launched more than 300 drones and missiles directly at Israel. Israel and its allies managed to repel all but a few ballistic missiles, and damage was minimal. The question now, what comes next? Thomas Junot is an associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa. Thomas Junot, good morning.
Good morning.
How real is the risk of a wider regional conflict after this attack by Iran on Saturday?
The risk is real, and I would certainly say that it's higher now than it was just a few days ago. If you take a couple steps back, there's probably three options, broadly speaking, for Israel. Option one is to do nothing, i.e. to let it slide and to accept Iran's invitation that the case is closed. I would be very surprised if Israel chose that option because from Israel's perspective, it would send a message of weakness. It would send a message to Iran that after, as you said, the unprecedented, very large-scale attack of Saturday, that Israel would not retaliate. That would send a green light to Iran to continue attacking Israel. At the other extreme, the really scary scenario is a large-scale Israeli retaliation, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe later this week, and that would really raise the risk of a large-scale escalation and all-out war. There's probably a range of scenarios in between, which is, yes, Israel retaliates, but no, it doesn't retaliate on a large scale. It may not be right now. It may not be direct. It may be several instances of retaliation and not just one big one. Does that mean that we're outside the scenario of escalation and regional war in that middling scenario? No, but the risk is probably lower.
So the G7, the UN Security Council, the UK, the US President Joe Biden, all have made statements, all have met and talked about the need for restraint. Joe Biden spoke with Benjamin Netanyahu saying that the United States, for example, would not be joining Israel if it were to attack Iran. What will that do you think, those calls for restraint?
Well, that does matter in many ways because, you know, one of the pillars of Israel's military doctrine is to try at least not to fight a war on its own, not to fight a war without great power protection, i.e. the U.S. But does that guarantee that Israel will not retaliate on a large scale? No, because there's a couple of factors in particular that we can identify. One, there's the idea that if Israel retaliates on a large scale against Iran and then Iran re-retaliates and then you have a tit-for-tat and real escalation, the U.S. will be pulled in. And there's no reason to doubt that. And Israel knows this. It would not make the U.S. happy, but it's probably reality. The other thing is that from Israel's perspective, there's a perception here, and whether you or I agree with this perception is not really what matters. The point is that in Israel, the thinking now is we need to push back, because by failing to push back, that's what brought us 7 October and the large terrorist attack. By failing to push back by Hamas, by failing to push back over the years against Iran, or at least by failing to push back enough, that's what led Iran to believe that it could do what it did on Saturday, which when you think of it, is really big. I mean, Iran sent 300 missiles and drones, including dozens of ballistic missiles, against Israel. So from Israel's perspective, the idea that they are being restrained from responding for them is really dangerous and that they need to respond somehow.
You said on social media that both the U.S., but I think most, more interesting here, Iran has clearly signaled that they want the cycle of violence to stop for now. In light of what you just said about how in describing the scale of Iran's attack, what was the point of what Iran was trying to do? If now you say that they want the cycle of violence to end for now,
so that's a good point. You know, I mentioned some of the pillars of Israel's doctrine. One of the pillars of Iran's doctrine under the Islamic Republic has been to avoid open warfare with Israel and the U.S. because Iran knows, and it is right in thinking this, that in a scenario of full escalation, all-out regional war between Israel and the U.S. on one side and Iran on the other, Iran loses. Iran certainly has the ability to cause a lot of damage because of all of their partner non-state groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, because of their large missile force. But ultimately, the U.S. and Israel are much stronger militarily than Iran. So in a scenario of all-out war, Iran is the one that suffers the most. And obviously, they're not irrational. Iran's leaders want to avoid this. So from Iran's perspective, the whole art of Iran's foreign policy over the years has been to push, to provoke, to attack indirectly, to be in that gray area between peace and all-out war, while making sure not to take the steps that would bring us to all-out war. What happened on Saturday really stretched that. That was a large-scale provocation by Iran that really brings that risk of open warfare, which is why in the middle of the night, Iran and Israel time, while the drones were still in the air, Iran's mission to the UN and Iranian government leaders were already saying on Twitter and elsewhere, we're done, we're stopping, which was a clear message on Iran's part that they did not want this to escalate. Why did they do it at this scale? Because the Iran's leaders believed that they needed to send a message of strength. There's that idea again after Israel's assassination of an Iranian general on April 1st. And because they needed, Iran wanted to feed that narrative of resistance against Israel, against the U.S. So from a propaganda perspective, what Iran did on Saturday night will give it images that it will be able to leverage to propagate that narrative of resistance for years to come.
Two things very quickly that I need to ask you before I let you go. One is, in the face of everything that you've said, is containment possible?
That's a really good question, and it's hard to answer. Israel would tell you right now, if you had somebody from the Israeli government, would tell you, no, containment is not possible, because containment brought us the 7 October Hamas terrorist attacks, and containment brought us the attacks on Saturday night, which from Israel's perspective, you have to understand why they say that. On the other hand, what are the alternatives? And I'm not sure what they are. Is it possible to contain more, to contain more intensely? Ideally, the solution is diplomatic. Ideally, the solution is a two-state solution in the Palestinian territories. Ideally, the solution is, some kind of modus vivendi between Israel, the U.S. on one side, and Iran on the other. But how do you achieve that, especially as long as the Islamic Republic, with its leaders committed to opposing violently Israel in the U.S., not clear to me how that can happen. So that's why I'm not optimistic.
That's the other question I was going to ask you. And again, we are out of time, but just very briefly, you also said that let's hope, this is on social media, let's hope the U.S. starts a serious push, a real one, not just a couple of tweets for a peace process after this. Is that possible?
It's possible that the U.S. will start it, but we're in an election year in the U.S. There is little to gain, I think, diplomatically or politically for the U.S. There is a far-right government in Israel that is committed to not implementing a two-state solution. Hamas will not be destroyed after this war. It will be committed to opposing a two-state solution. The Islamic Republic, as we've seen, is emboldened and opposes a two-state solution. So as much as I'd like to answer you in a more positive way, I'm afraid that it's hard to see that optimism.
Thomas Jeannot, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thomas Jeannot is an associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.